It is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday. We rebroadcast it during our noontime hour and also on the weekend. And on the weekend, I was listening to it, and I was listening to he was getting off and getting ready to make this recipe with potato chips and eggs and everything like that. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you Arthur Schwartz, and that would be my first question. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and in answering quickly, it was terrible. to rehash some of this, I made the this omelet. It's a potato chip omelet. Is the creation of Ferran Andria, who is, I guess you'd have to say, the most lauded chef in the world. He used to have a restaurant, a cutting-edge restaurant called El Bulli in Spain. But this recipe is from a book he wrote with a co-author about home cooking. And this is, you know, as homey as you can get. You just take a bag of potato chips and mix it with very, very well-beaten eggs and make a frittata kind of omelet, an open-faced omelet. You cook it in a skillet. And Ferran, of course, flips it, and I can do that too. But if my niece was curious about this, and she said, well, can't I just throw it under the broiler? And I said, absolutely, you can, and finish it that way. Well, anyway, the first attempt was made with fancy potato chips. I didn't realize they weren't real potato chips until I got them home. And then I thought, well, I'll do this anyway. They were baked potato chips, and they were not even made from whole potato. They had rice flour and some other starch in them. I don't know. Anyway, I did it. It really was horrible. I mean, it's amazing to me still that we ate it. I mean, normally it was a few, you know, half a dozen eggs and a bag of potato chips, I would have thrown it away.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, that's my fault because I didn't use real potato chips. So I went out and bought that, and that's where I left you last week. I was going to make it for lunch, and I did, and again, I would never make it again. I do not know what the appeal is. Now, maybe you need a Michelin-starred world-class chef to make this taste good. He does instruct you to beat the eggs for 4 minutes, which I have not done, I have to admit. I have only beaten them for like 2.5 minutes. They got as foamy and as inflated as I thought I was ever going to get them. So I just made the omelet, and I followed the instructions exactly. So moving on, however, this is something, you know, when something happens in the universe, there's a reason. And spaghetti a la carbonara has crossed my path at least 3 times in the last week. Then I'm talking to my friends via Skype in Rome, and carbonara is a Roman dish. And then I read the New York Times Magazine this past Sunday, and Samin Nosrat, who was the Sunday Magazine columnist, or one of them, who is, I don't know, I think he's Indian, or he's, I don't know, he's Asian of some kind. Very vague term, Asian, which bothers me, but that's another story. So he wrote about, he lives in, apparently, because he talks about it, he lives in the Bay Area. And what he's missing during the virus period is the little sort of nothing places that he goes to. And that's exactly what I'm missing, those little nothing places that I go to. For instance, my Mexican place in Sunset Park, where I go for the daily specials, and I'm missing their mole. And I miss, anyway, he wrote about a pancake that he misses at this Korean restaurant in Oakland, California, Bay Area. And it's chewy, crispy, salty, sweet Korean pancake made with kimchi. So he decided, well, since I can't go to the restaurant to eat it, maybe I should try to reproduce it at home. This is exactly what's on my mind these days. All right, can I make that at home? For instance, I've been researching recipes for char siu marinade. Char siu is the red, what we used to call red roasted pork, Chinese pork. And I really miss it, man. My char siu roast shop is closed. I was actually thinking of taking a ride today to see maybe they've opened now. But I do want to make it. So he made these pancakes. And then I can't get out of my head that it's going to be hard to get to Rome. And carbonara is so on my brain. But it's not an easy dish to make, believe it or not. There are four pastas in Rome that are considered Roman. The simplest is the hardest to make. That would be cacio e pepe. And in fact, there are now restaurants here in at least the Northeast, I'm sure also on the West Coast, that feature cacio e pepe. And I always say, well, you know, you might, it's like aglio olio is easy to do at home, you know, oil and garlic. But just cheese and pepper to make a smooth, nice, creamy pasta sauce takes a lot of technique and also some pasta cooking water. Then up the scale of difficulty is, and I was reading about this morning because I was reading missives from Roman friends, and my friend Maureen Fant, who is a New Yorker who's been living in Rome, I think it could be 35 years by now. If anybody knows Roman food, it's Maureen, and Maureen has written a book called Sauces and Shapes with another friend of mine, Oretta Zanini, who is in fact a Roman food historian, an elderly woman, at this point, but still kicking and still writing. And anyway, Maureen agrees that everybody in Rome now adds a little bit of fat to their cacio e pepe, because it really does help make a creamy coating on the pasta. The next one up is alla gricia. It's sort of the stepchild of these, because you don't see a lot of gricia around. And gricia is cacio e pepe, but with the fat from guanciale. Guanciale is pork jowl. And used to be impossible to find in the United States, but I find it readily these days, which is always shocking to me, that I can go into a supermarket, at least here in Brooklyn, and they do have guanciale sometimes. And I certainly have specialty markets that sell guanciale. But truth be told, I can acquire really good guanciale, but I prefer the dish made with pancetta. And pancetta it's easier to find good pancetta than good guanciale. On the other hand, I have recently been buying, only because it's so easy to get, Citerio, which is made in Pennsylvania, by the way. And it's a very good brand of Italian pork products. But Citerio makes a pancetta that's already cut into a tiny dice, and it comes in a 4-ounce package in the refrigerated case where the hot dogs and other salumi, preserved pork are. And I've been using it, but you know what? For these dishes, it doesn't have enough flavor. It's fine. I thought it was fine when I used it as the base for a zucchini dish, because it is so mild in flavor. And then I used it also to make pasta and peas, and it was okay in that case, too, because, you know, it added the fat without a whole lot of pancetta aggressiveness, and we got the pea flavor. But in the case of these Roman pastas, I would try to seek out something more flavorful than the citerio, and you'll probably have to cut it up yourself, either in batons or in dice, either way. So the next one is gricia, which gets the fat that people add on the sneak to cacio e pepe from the guanciale, and you render out the guanciale, and you add some pasta cooking water, because by this time your pasta is at least half cooked. And by the way, here's a little trick. If you do want to attempt guanciale alla gricia, and also cacio e pepe, the same thing, cook your pasta in a little less water than you usually do. And what I usually do is for every 4 ounces, you have to have at least a quart of water for every 4 ounces of pasta. So that means that a pound of pasta requires a minimum of 4 quarts of water, and I usually do 5. predates my pot. But in this case, use a little less, and maybe a little less salt, which you can add at the end, because you're going to use the pasta cooking water, and you want it to be starchy pasta cooking water. So reducing the amount of water per amount of pasta makes the water a little starchier. So in the case of gricia, it's the same thing. You know, you have to really stir the pasta in the fatty water with cheese until you get this nice emulsion. I'll get to the cheese in a minute. Then up the scale is carbonara, which is, I guess, my main comfort food after egg rolls that I can order in. Carbonara, I have to make myself. And it's not something I would eat in a restaurant, because most of the time in an American restaurant, even an Italian-American restaurant, they put cream in the carbonara or other things that I don't want in my carbonara. All I want is pancetta, oh yes, guanciale, but I prefer pancetta, eggs, and cheese. So in the case of carbonara, you're making an emulsified sauce using eggs. And, of course, add some protein to the dish, so I can rationalize that this is actually a well-rounded dish. It's a little cholesterol heaven here. So carbonara, you render out your pancetta or guanciale, cut into either little, you know, thin batons or dice. I have had this dish made with ground pancetta. I did not like, or very finely chopped pancetta. I did not like that. I want pieces, but I don't want big pieces, and I don't want them to be chewy pieces. So I render them very slowly over low heat in a skillet with just a gloop of olive oil to get the thing started. You'll see that after just a few minutes, there'll be way more fat in the pan than just that gloop of olive oil. And in the meantime, in the bowl that you're going to mix everything, well, that you're going to mix the egg mixture, so medium bowl, break your eggs. Now, for 12 ounces of pasta, I use 4 ounces of pancetta, and a gloop to me is like a tablespoon of olive oil. And you don't need more than that. And I use 12 ounces of pasta. Did I say that? Mm-hmm. And for 12 ounces of pasta, I want 4 eggs. Now, go online. You're going to find a million variations on the proportions here. And one of the TV demonstrators I saw making carbonara the other day used an insane amount of eggs. Like, for a pound of pasta, 6 eggs and 6 egg yolks? No, that's really going to be gross. For 12 ounces of pasta, I use usually 3 whole eggs and 1 egg yolk. Sometimes 2 egg yolks. When I'm staying in Salerno, Cecilia brings me from her farm goose eggs and duck eggs, and they make sensational carbonara, I have to say, but 1 goose egg is enough for 12 ounces of pasta. And the duck eggs, if you make it with 2 duck eggs, it's going to be still a very rich dish. You know, you want a whole pound of pasta, use 4 eggs and 1 extra egg yolk, maybe 2 extra egg yolks if you want it super duper rich and creamy. So you beat the eggs in your bowl with a substantial amount of pepper, meaning a teaspoon of freshly ground pepper, and at least a half a cup of grated cheese. So now we're down to the cheese. Now the classic cheese for all the Roman pastas is pecorino, because Roman cuisine is the food of shepherds. With the exception of carbonara, the name refers to the charcoal burner people, the charcoal makers, who were in the woods of northern Lazio, Abruzzo, and Umbria. Abruzzo, by the way, is where the city of Amatrice is, which is why it's spaghetti Amatrice, because it's after a town called Amatrice. Anyway, so sheep's milk cheese is the standard cheese for all of these. Big however, modern taste sometimes dictates the necessity of Parmigiano, a sweeter, less salty cheese than Pecorino, less sharp. And you definitely will find Romans eating their, not cacio e pepe, not gricia, but certainly carbonara and certainly amatriciana, which is the last one I'm going to talk about. Those are the four Roman pastas. The standard pasta for carbonara is spaghetti, but you will also see tubular pastas like penne a la carbonara. I have no objection, but I really do love spaghetti anyway, and so I'm happy with spaghetti. Not linguine, not bucatini, not thin spaghetti, normal spaghetti a la carbonara. So now you have your beaten eggs with pepper and cheese, and in the skillet you have your rendered and pancetta. And I like to render it so that the pancetta really doesn't get like brown and crispy, but it starts to color, and you have lots of fat in the pan. Boil your pasta until it is the way you like it. Al dente really means the way you like it. It doesn't. It really means firm. But I wouldn't go, if you look at a pasta package these days, and some of the companies are doing this now, they'll tell you how many minutes for al dente and how many minutes for classico or not al dente. And al dente, for me, even, who likes very firm pasta, is usually too firm for me. So do it to your taste. Drain the pasta. You don't need any pasta cooking water usually for carbonara, but you could save a little bit just in case. And heat up your fat with the pancetta in the pan. Toss the pasta, hot pasta, in the hot fat with the pan. Toss it around. And then turn the heat off the pan and pour the eggs and cheese mixture over it all. Or you could add the pasta to the eggs and cheese mixture in the bowl if you're really nervous about curdling the eggs, which you don't want to do. If the pan is really retaining a lot of heat, it could do that. So in the old days, I'm skilled enough at this point that I don't do this anymore, but when I was less secure about my skill, I used to take some of the hot pasta, now dressed with hot fat, and put it into the eggs with the tongs. Just lift it out, put it in the eggs, and it sort of tempers the eggs so that they won't curdle with the sudden introduction of heat. At the end, if your eggs have not really cooked the way you think they should and become this creamy coating on all the pasta, you can put the pan back on the tiniest heat and just toss until it gets thickened. I have a friend who taught me a technique that I sometimes use. The burners on my stove stay pretty hot even after I've turned off the flame, and so I can put the pan back on the heat, and if it isn't cooked enough, I just cover the pan and let it sit a minute or two. And that residual heat will cook the eggs enough to make them creamy and not curdle. And there you go. You can add some extra cheese at the table. If you don't want to use Parmigiano altogether, you could use half Pecorino, half Parmigiano. I would say for a pound of pasta, you need at least a half a cup of cheese, whatever it is. And lots of pepper. So there are different theories about the name carbonara. And one I heard on one of these TV segments was that the charcoal burners, the makers in those regions I mentioned before. And that seems to be the most likely. But there's another story that it has so much pepper in it, so much black pepper ground over it, that you can that it looks like the ashes of the carbon makers fell on the dish. I don't know.
I prefer
whatever
the first
it is. It's charming.
I prefer the first one. The first explanation.
Yeah, I prefer the first. Well, also it makes more sense, and also since Oretta Zanini is, to me, the number one Roman food historian, and she claims that is the story. That my question to Oretta, I have to ask, see if she's got a Skype or Zoom so I can talk to her in Italy, but I have to ask her, about these eggs. I mean, did the charcoal makers, like, bring chickens with them so that they would have the eggs? Listen, I have no time, and my last one is the one that I make the most often because Mr. Harned likes it the best. Well, he loves carbonara. But I must say, the last one, amatriciana, is the easiest because it doesn't require any serious technique like eggs curdling and or cheese emulsifying without fat, as in cacio e pepe. But in this case, I would use guanciale if I had good guanciale because it cooks a little. It's in a tomato sauce, so it does cook a little longer. It becomes more tender. I like it. However, and the fat is different, but a pancetta is perfect. So 4 ounces of pancetta. This is going to be for, I'm going to tell you, it's more sauce than Bob and I eat at a meal, but then I recycle it. So I make, this is for one can of tomatoes, let's say. It's one 28-ounce can of tomatoes you're going to add. Start out with 4 ounces of diced or batons of pancetta. Render it out just the way I described it before with a glop of olive oil or two. And you'll end up with a pan full of fat. And as soon as the pancetta starts to brown, doesn't get brown, just like you see a tinge here, add a half of an onion finely diced. Or one tiny onion. You know, sometimes when I go to the store, I buy onions for different purposes. So I buy some medium onions. And lately, the last 20 years, I also buy some tiny onions because one tiny onion is good for an amatriciana. So one tiny onion, minced, throw that in the pan, cook it gently along with continuing with the pancetta. The adding the onion, the moisture of the onion, and the coolness of the onion will prevent the pancetta from getting any browner. So you can continue cooking. Usually takes about a good 8 minutes of low heat to get the onion tender. And then I add a pinch of hot red pepper, perhaps 2 pinches, depends on who's eating it. Just for us, it's 1 pinch. And then I'll add a little later, maybe. And one can of really good tomatoes. What do I mean? I mean, if you can buy them San Marzano. My fancy supermarket around the corner is carrying a brand that I'd never seen before, and I was, of course that makes you skeptical, but they're sensational. And they're under $4 a can, so I see that even, $4 a can is a good price for a can of San Marzano, authentic San Marzano tomatoes, or the best canned tomato you can buy. So put that in the pan. I put them in whole with the pancetta and grease from the pancetta and fat. And break up the tomatoes with the side of your spoon and keep breaking them up. You're going to want them to cook into a sauce. I don't use crushed tomatoes. I can't get the quality of tomato in a can of crushed tomatoes the way I can in a can of, real good San Marzano tomatoes. And that's it. You're probably going to need to add some salt, perhaps not any black pepper because you've added some red pepper. Depends. If you don't like red pepper, don't use it. Use black pepper only. And simmer that sauce for 10 or 12 minutes until it really cooks down to a nice... So it's not going to be smooth. It's going to be chunky. And that's it. That's your amatriciana sauce. In this case, it really is a sauce because you've made it separately from the pasta, whereas in the other three, there is no real sauce. It's the flavorings that you put on it, the condimenti, are incorporated into the pasta itself. In this case, it is a sauce. And that should sauce, a 28-ounce can will really sauce a whole pound of pasta. So we don't need a whole pound of pasta. We try to keep it to 3 ounces each. It's only 6 ounces of pasta, and a splurge night will do 4 ounces each, which is 8 ounces of pasta. It's still only a half a pound. So I always end up with a lot, and Bob likes a lot of sauce, but even with putting a lot of sauce on his, I always end up with a nice amount of leftover sauce. And my thing to do with that usually is a couple days later, I'm refrigerated, of course, I make pasta and lentils, a recipe I make a lot of, I make a lot of, because it's easy. I always have the ingredients in the house. And, I mean, I could use a spoon of tomato paste as my tomato product. I can use a couple of plum tomatoes crushed in my hand as the tomato product. I could use some pre-made tomato sauce. But when I add my amatriciana sauce as the tomato product, and I only have to have, like, for my big pot of lentils, maybe 3/4 cup of sauce, it really adds a lot. And so we had that for lunch the other day, pasta and lentils made with amatriciana sauce.
Right. Now, we got an email here, Arthur. Someone sent me a message. Arthur, Salman Nasrat is a woman.
Oh, I didn't know. she writes like a man.
So she's, that's what the person says.
So what, do we know the ethnicity?
I don't know, but I'm obviously that person is listening. So
I'm going to look her up.
Yeah.
Now that I know the correct pronoun, I'm going to look her up as soon as I get off the air. And no potato chip omelet today.
Okay.
Salmon, yeah. Samin Nosrat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they. I must say, I call myself the food maven. I've been called that. That's why I call myself that. But I really feel at a loss these days that I don't know everything at all, because my education is in European and even South American food. But not Asian food, and American food, but not Asian food. And I must say, the young people really appreciate Asian food more than anything, it seems, except for the ones on TV making carbonara. I was glad to see it being done, at least everybody saying, no cream, no cream, no cream, no prosciutto in carbonara. All right, I'm going to go look her up now, and everybody have a good week.
And no more potato chips in
eggs. No, do not even bother with the potato chip omelet.
Just put it on a piece of bread.
I mean, it intrigues me. If I ever meet Ferran Andre, I'm going to ask him, could you make me this omelet? Here, I'll go buy a bag of potato chips.
Just put it on a piece of bread, put a little mayonnaise, and there you go.
No, but it's extreme. I mean, it is one of the most popular recipes on the New York Times cooking website.
That's because
And the reason is, of course, it's intriguing. It intrigued me.
Yeah. It's like most of the recipes you see on the Food Network. They're entirely disgusting, but people just go for them.
I know. Well, let's not go there all the way, okay? All right. I do love Trisha Yearwood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I'm just... I
have a crush on Trisha Yearwood.
I love Guy Fieri, but...
I want to eat in her house.
Of course,
I'd get to meet Garth Brooks at the same time, that would be thrilling.
Yeah, you know, I like Guy Fieri, but the food that he produces...
Oh, no. Look, I like Guy Fieri, too. Yeah. I think he actually has a lot of charm.
Yeah.
People underestimate his charisma, I think.
Yeah,
but it's about him.
Yeah.
The food that on the Diners and Dives show,
yeah,
it's gross. Most of it is so gross. No wonder he only takes one bite of it.
That's right.
And on the Grocery Games, which I've watched from time to time, they don't make gross food, but they give them ridiculous challenges, I think. You know. Anyway, it's okay.
Yeah.
It entertains people.
That's right.
But Trisha Yearwood, I like her a lot.
Her show's good.
And I like her food mostly. And the other one is The Pioneer Woman.
Yes, I watched that show because I just like that show as well. Yeah, you're right. They're both fun
to
watch.
Well, I like to watch people who really cook.
They cook.
Yeah, even if she's making this thing for the first time because her producers came up with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying even if. She does cook. Yeah. You can tell. And she, you know, whatever. Anyway, she's very, I like her.
Right.
I wouldn't make everything she makes, but that's okay. Yeah. But I like her. And then she does come up with stuff. I said, maybe I should look this up online and do it.
All right. Well,
but now my chief goal today is to make at least two of these different, I have all the ingredients here, do these different char siu marinades and decide what I'm going to do about that. And then get in the car and go see if they're open.
All right, Arthur, have a great week.
All right, you too, Marshall.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.